have found that in order to get full coverage on YouTube, you have to have copyright-free music, because I'm all about getting that bag. You cannot get monetized. If you have anything that resembles possible copyright infringement. Therefore, I had to change my name. A new year, a new time for podcasting. And I had to get a funky beat to basically express what I want to put out in the atmosphere. And this is Tenfro. I'm back again. I'm a social critic, thought leader, but I'm more reclusive and cranky. But I want to read, watch, cook, and just share all things that make me happy. My wish is that this increases the curiosity of the listening audience to come back for more and to share with friends. I want 1 million unique listeners and downloads. I want creative quality Millie to be known around the world. Won't he do it? Yes, he will. So if you're listening to me on YouTube, click subscribe. Tip a sister. And I just want to thank you guys for listening. And enjoy and get your bop on. Copyright free.
My homegirl, Naquita J. Elmore, Najee. Lift every chair and swing till all them white folks scream. Thought y'all could run up on our black king. I'm glad the squad pulled up, dedicated to Nuck. If you buck, may it resound loud as the roar.
Viva La France, y'all. Viva La France. How, I mean, I think that would aggravate every white supremacist, French white supremacist. And I'm trying to come to terms. Do they think it's, I was trying to figure out in my mind, was this a cultural supremacy predicated on race, or is it a mixture? Yes, it is, because race is a social or a societal construct. So if you think your society or your culture is more supreme than others, and it just so happens that you want the majority to remain nice, light, and white, then your right-wing racist stances will be predicated on that. So, racists are stupid. And in woke history, I continue to point out just how dumb they are. And this all came out. Why am I going on this really militant midget rant? For those of you that don't know who the militant midget was, this was a nickname that James Evans gave his youngest son, Michael Evans, because he was more militant and, what is it called? Huey Lewis, but the Black Panthers leaning members of the Evans family, Good Times, which was a groundbreaking show during the 70s about a Black family living in the Chicago ghettos. They have now going to reprise it into a cartoon that's actually getting ready to premiere on Netflix. They say, I'm reserving judgment on it until I at least watch the first episode, but it is, they say it's an updated version of Good Times, but it has every racial, stereotypical, ghetto, leaning, racist leaning. It's very, very not good from what other people have said. I wasn't so impressed with the trailer. I'm gonna watch it because it has a large majority of African American actors and actresses. So I'm gonna check it out just because before I drag it. So with that said, this article came out in the New York Times last week. It basically reports that the French Malian singer Aya Nakamura, they basically are saying that she does not represent France. So they said her lyrics not academic French. Okay, she is like a crossover artist, very highly awarded, and it's wild because she was born in Mali, which was a former French colony, but she grew up and was educated in some French suburb. Her lyrics mix French, Arabic, English, and West African dialects. And I actually downloaded and listened to some of her music on Apple Music. The way that you get to a racist is you make a mockery of the stupid things that they say. So she already is highly decorated in French, very celebrated in France, actually worldwide, internationally celebrated. I'm going to have you navigate to the podcast notes and just stream her music like it, your life depended on it. Every hacker that's left in Ukraine and Russia, please actually stream this woman's music, because a lot of what these right-wing conservative dumbasses, they come out and have, and they think, they've been saying this shit for years. It's not, it's like Trump made it okay to sound stupid. He just basically doubled down on sounding stupid on an international stage. But as far as the colonists and the white supremacy whole thing, we think of the English and even Spanish and Americans as the harbingers or the arbiters of white power. But France has been tripping since the 18th century. They actually had an empire prior to Napoleon, before they got spanked in the Seven Years' War with England, and they lost their colonies to both England and Spain. After the war, they basically started to reestablish their second, and the French Revolution, they began to reestablish their empire and basically had a civilizing mission under the guise of spreading Catholicism and the French language. This is that academic French that the right wing conservatives in France are talking about. The civilization of the quote unquote lower races. This is anybody that wasn't white and did not speak French as a primary language. And assimilation did not cure. When you culturally assimilate, it did not cure that you can't change the fact that you, even though you can speak French brilliantly, you can adopt the culture and erase your own culture brilliantly. But you will always be a subject and not necessarily equal. You still were considered a lower class citizen, a subject of the empire. Mali came under French colonial rule in 1892 And immediately was met with resistance by all of the different tribes, et cetera, that were there. They've squashed it brutally to continue their reign. And then most of West Africa at that time became the world wars, and how France proper began to fight against the Nazis, use Africa as a base to basically push back and annihilate the Third Reich. And this unease, or they basically could say one thing and do another, just very similar to American French freedom from oppression and equality only equates to French speaking white French speakers. It did not equate, and also rich people, don't get that, there's classism that's associated with this. It only was for the upper class French white folks. This equality had nothing to do with you actually being born in France, being formerly of a citizen of one of the French colonies. It had nothing to do with that. And this is how this unease with being able to promote equality, but only as it stems or applies to white French speakers, is almost laughable. It didn't, like the founding fathers, when it says all men are created equal, they meant that. All white rich men are created equal. And all the other classes and the other races are subjects, are not full citizens. And it's so wild that during the Harlem Renaissance, and for also a part of the diaspora, people like James Joyce, Tina Turner, and every other African-American, Duke Ellington, a lot of the other jazz greats, when they fled from America to France, some of them, because they were rich, were often met with, truly looked down upon for being racist, because we try as humans, we always have to have some type of, have an overwhelming need to create hierarchies where you have to have somebody that has to feel and be above someone else. They've done it. They did it in the church. They've done it as far as classes, the monarchy, the imperial, all of those things, because of this overwhelming need to feel that you are better or above, based on this minutia that it doesn't make any sense. And it apply, and it's so wild that Mali, Haiti, the only way that you have to have true, actually freedom was being able, they have these huge raise up in arms to basically free themselves, you know, like why, and they basically, that's why Haiti and La Ouverture had to rise up to basically free themselves, because the French were never going to actually free the slaves in Haiti. But then they plunged this whole country into generational poverty and sectarian infighting because they dared to revolt against that government. You know, white is right, but when it's wrong, it's wrong. And it always seems like former French colonies have truly struggled to find their footing, because when they go in, it seems like French, they say they obliterate and they basically erase every marker. And they, when they quell revolt, they basically kill off anybody that can remember the old ways and how they were organized, and they were more advanced than the French culture was. And that's why some of these former colonies have such, either it's generational PTSD, or they have such organizational power, or a lack of power, or lack of organization to be able to pivot and become productive, because they were subjected to such aggressive assimilation, they've forgotten what it truly is to be themselves and go on and progress with no longer being under the provincial French rule. That's why I think some of these former French colonies in Africa are having so much issues with continued poverty, continued corruption, and Haiti is getting ready to collapse into civil war and civil unrest because of their complete racial assimilation and erasure of what it means to be strong, proud, productive, and truly being able to apply all of those ideas of equality in either republic democracy or democracy in general, because they never felt that way and it never worked. You only held on to power by either absolute dictatorship. That's why people like Papa Doc were able to rule corruptively and with absolute power. But a lot of the French rule ends up in revolt, but then it seems like they can't figure out what to do until they go through this cycle of continued violence and corruption. It's really sad. And it's also sad why France need to be able to not necessarily assimilate, but be able to celebrate artists and creators like Nakamura, because she truly is the face of New France. It's less white, more diverse, and there's still so much power in diversity. And this is how your society can be stronger and can go on without you basically denigrating or degrading someone because they don't look like what your concept is of what a true cultural, what true new French culture should actually, and society should actually look like. And hello, young French folks. Are you gonna let the white ring politicians rep y'all? Or are you going to take them and tell them have many seats? Because that is not who you want to be. That's not who you are. And what are you going to say? Are you going to remain quiet and complicit? Or are you going to basically tell your grand, take the phone of your grandpa and your mama and them and basically say, this is what you said, and this is how we want to be rep to the world. And we want her because she's a decorated French artist. On an international stage, she should rep us in the Olympics. And I basically admonish all of y'all to step up, speak out, stream all day on repeat. Put them in the rotation with Beyonce's music and screw the French races.
Butterfly in the scotch, I can go twice as high. So take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow. I can go anywhere. Ways to know and ways to grow, a temporal rainbow. I can be anything. So take a look. It's in a book, a tinfoil rainbow. A tinfoil rainbow. A tinfoil rainbow.
I need to warn all potential spam callers, recruiters, and just general annoying people like you are the campaign manager for a Republican candidate. I say all of that to say is I really want to fuss at people because I work from home, and except for my barking dog, I don't really have anybody to tussle with that annoys me more than incessant barking over a leaf or her own shadow or her own barking. This dog actually spent about 5 minutes earlier today barking at herself. She's hilarious. And the more she eats her own food and she becomes more of a dog, the more she barks, which is hysterical. But I will leave her alone because she's really cute. But anyways, And because of her, now I'm hooked on this weirdo's show called Will Trent. Also because it's actually shot in Georgia. And I recognize a lot of the places in Atlanta, so it's kind of hilarious. But other than that, me and my road dog, I'm probably going to write the Ethel Chronicles, and we're going to go and look for food this upcoming weekend, if I so choose. This is a great way to start reading Rainbow, because it's not only more about what I'm reading, it's also about a reality TV show, The Bold and the Bougie, where they're shot, of course, is it also in Atlanta. Not the most bougiest part of Atlanta, according to Marlo Hampton and her fake ass. But other than that, I am lucky because not only do I follow Carlos, most of all of Carlos King, and his years as not only producer of The Real Housewives of Atlanta and his now Kingdom Reign production company and all of his very successful reality TV shows. He's one of the only, besides Tyler and his crew, one of the most profound and deliberately successful African-American production companies in the genre of reality TV. And I have, even though I have not listened or even watched from his YouTube channel, his exclusive interview with Tamika Raymond, or Tamika Foster, who I'm sure she probably wants to go by, I did gather from her book and also from the show, because there was a really, it was a scene that they actually taped or recorded for that show, Bold and Bougie, where it was her book signing. I was actually away in Virginia at the time, and I basically downloaded and purchased through Audible her autobiography, Here I Stand, which is narrated by her. And it was through the through Bold and Bougie, the show, and this, one of the latest episodes, then going on to her interview, which I haven't watched, but gaining more insight into who she is and why she seems so, I don't know if she knows, if she thinks that she's above all of this, and she wants to be known for her own fabulosity. And she is really annoyed, like the original Aunt Viv, John Amos, and why JJ was getting more airtime and he got terminated. And also Aunt B, when she was on the Annie Griffith show. She just feels, and the book feels like this too. I'm not saying that it's not well written or well edited, but they asked the question, I believe, in the interview, is she being erased from Usher's history? I think so, but it's going to be hard because he actually has two sons, Usher Jr., I believe, and another, I think, Pharaoh or something weird name kid, through her time with him. And y'all realize she was with Usher less than 5 years. They had two kids and they were married officially less than 2 years before Usher filed for a divorce. And he had her shit packed up and she was out of the manse. And it seems like she got harassed. Literally harassed, because there is a 7-year age difference. When they actually met and then they started canoodling, although she was legally separated, she wasn't completely divorced from her husband at the time of her entering into a romantic relationship with Usher. Even though only a small part of her life was with Usher, it still seems like her subsequent chapter, and even currently, is still defined by her time with him. And it seems like the more she tries to shed that overcast of suspicion and more probably player haterism, she's not ever going to be able to shake the fact that she was married to a megastar and she basically had to basically reinvent herself again, even though she is defined not only by him, that ex-husband who's a megastar. Her first husband was really nobody to be played with. He actually was in the entertainment industry, but he wasn't as big as Usher. In her career, even though she was that girl, she was in the know, she styled some of the most noteworthy people, she still was not as big as Usher, but a lot of what she did and has done is still defined by her time with him. And I don't know if she will ever, it doesn't seem like she's going to be able to reconcile that. She seems to be smarting, like no one is going to ask her about her time with one of the biggest pop stars, R&B stars in the country, who's still a menace to society, who still has a modicum of success, even though a lot of people are mad at him for canoodling with Russell Simmons. She cannot mask her disdain for her castmates. I think Marlo, and I keep going back to Marlo Hampton, she basically shocked, but she calls it like she sees him. Even though she was not believable as a Real Housewives of Atlanta full-time peach holder, how her throwing shade and mess on Carla when she gets interviewed by Carlos King is perfect about what she should be doing. And if I know Marlo Hampton, it is basically, if somebody's going to be able to monetize what she's doing now with Carlos, I believe that this is what her road should actually be. And we need to see more of her silver martini cups and her sipping off of her blinged out straws, that kind of stuff. We really need to see that. But the mess that she was doing for the last couple of seasons on Real Housewives, now we don't need to see any of that. We need to see her redoing her house for the third or maybe fourth time, which she basically said she owns and she paid cash for it. That's the Marlo I want to see. But she said some very intriguing things. She basically says pointed out, and I don't think she alluded to it because Marlo is also not really all that stupid. There's quiet luxury. She enjoys things 90 days and you repeat it. She basically is in a battle of the bosses with Gaucher, but she's becoming like a homophobic curmudgeon. She doesn't like Crystal, and although Crystal was a jump off and basically bagged Neo, but she's still young and basically is going to reinvent herself and twerk while she's doing it. And I think maybe Tamika, either she sees herself in Crystal or she wished she did have the same devil may care attitude and would have twerked her way into basically still doing boss moves, but still and married Usher. But she doesn't want to come off as that. She wants to become off as the elegant, pretty, mature woman who tamed Usher. And that's if basically in her book, if Jermaine Dupri had anything to do with that, that wasn't the image, and Usher was still less than 30. So there was no way he was going, there was nobody in Usher's life that was going to make him grow up from the sexy heartthrob, because heartthrob, mature father, those things are not synonymous. And I think that's what her bitterness is. But I do honestly think, even though, and I think maybe it is some of the same thing, Gauche lives her life and she still has all of these other businesses and she's gay. And why does she have all of these success even in spite of her being having a same-sex marriage? Crystal was supposed to basically dry up and die after she left Neo, but she's not. She still looks fabulous and she's twerking her way to her next episode. It seems to me that although as of yet, because I'm only about 3/4 of the way through the autobiography, I don't think she hasn't said this as much, but I don't know, and she has not admitted to any regrets, but it does appear that she's player hating their boldness and their known like self-worth, because it's not defined about who they're with. And it's they are making boss moves outside and in spite of children and in spite of family and in spite of who they're married to or who they boot up with. So even though she's trying to, her mask of her disdain for her castmates and her sitting in judgment of them is slowly crumpling away. And some of the realest moments of the show, we can see chinks in her her armor, because she still is vulnerable. She knows she's being judged, but if she had a bit of the self-worth and had gotten the therapy that is apparent that Gauche, Malika, and Crystal have, she would not be, she would, I don't think she would be able to be recorded so negatively, because it's kind of hard to want to feel sorry for her when she doesn't let you in. She has up this hard armor and her dismissive attitude just basically comes off as disdain for who these people are, because they're living in their truth and it just doesn't seem that she's able to live in her truth. And even though she's really annoyed at everyone, that's what I'm picking up on the vast majority of this book. 7 years his senior, only was with him less than 5 years, and the vast majority of her book is still dedicated to her time with Usher and her trying to separate from him. And then she can't understand why he has been allowed to live spousal support free in her head for almost 20 years after the fact of them actually being together. That is completely blowing my mind. So, how to extricate yourself from the memory of a long ago divorced spouse? I don't know what to tell you, girl, but I don't know if this book was a purge or if it was just another way for you to collect on what was probably owed to you. I'm hoping it does, and I'm hoping we're going to see something different in the show that you're on now, because I'm wondering, why did you do this show if you have such disdain for this variety of African-American women? And is there a way forward? I don't know.
The Shade Bunch, the Shade Bunch. I hope turning up for checks to pay for fake lifestyles were to be a part of the Shady Bunch.
So what's going on in the general life of it all? Well, I'm not gallivanting around the world because my knees and feet hurt. And now I have heel pain of unknown origin. I finally have replaced and refilled and spiked my farm stand to take on greens and bok choy and cucumbers. waiting for the strawberries to come back in season. I still have to order my quick grow trees. I'll probably order those in the next couple of days. And I also want to know, does Terminix have a reliable hornet control? Because these bees are insane. I'm going to have to get a re-up on my wasp control raid or hot shot that kills them mid-air. But other than that, what's going on in pop culture and reality TV? Well, Carlos King has done it again. It appears he actually must have had a come to Jesus moment with his cast from Love and Hip Hop DC. The realest moment was Jamie Jr. and Ashley Silva going over their mental health struggles. It was so real that I'm actually going to listen to. She basically released, I thought this was brilliant, a chapter by chapter read of her autobiography on Audible. I actually have downloaded that, and I'm excited about listening to it after I finish up with Tamika Foster's book. I think Joy and Ashley also squashing their fake beef, but calling Cliff sassy is ballsy. And yes, he is a real mean girl, most deaf. And he should be a part of The Real Housewife because he's just that petty. But anyways, underneath the weave and the sequins, Ashley still is very petty and she holds grudges. And Quick is always like gang gang Quick and like yep yep, but they've basically, he knows her, they've been married for so long, they've tolerated both of their shenanigans, they still get it, and I get it, and I now can relate to her. When I was like, I don't really like her that much, but she actually is real. She's one of those people that you don't know how to read, and they only let you in when they think you are worthy of it. But seeing Joy climb her and wrap her legs around her to give her a hug, and she was like, oh, girl, please. That was really neat. But when Jamie put on that athlete wig of his wife, that was so crazy. Ashley has a complicated relationship with her mother, and she was young. And she looks like her mother, that is, looks like one of those women that back in their day when they were young was really pretty. Now she's old and now she's really trying to blame her daughter for what she once had. It's a lot of jealousy that I can see within that. And also, I love the fact that a reality TV show actually is getting real, and all the messy bits and how you can look really good on the outside, but you can be real messed up on the inside. I'm also annoyed, and this is coming from a place where I had stopped watching The Real Housewives of Potomac, like, mid-season, because it was just so boring. The last 15 minutes of the season finale, and then now the last 15 minutes of the reunion show was again saved by me. Kim Fire, I don't know why you encourage people to watch the uncensored version, because maybe it's just because they didn't bleep out all of the cussing. But it was just so useless to watch because it didn't really truly get interesting until Mia started explaining her relationship with Ink and the demise of the relationship with Gordon. But in watching it on Peacock, did not get rid of the fact that this past season was a really slow burn and dumpster fire. And it just wasn't realistic. The fake beefs, the cover-ups, the deflections. I'm not there for it. And them trying to pull something out of the worst PR agent ever, Robin Dixon, was dumb. Giselle's not going to give any true tea. What she's going to say is not going to make any sense. And it's not, and she would never say anything truly against Robin and vice versa. Nobody wants to see a biopic on Juan Dixon's life, who is the Tommy of husbands. And he was mediocre in the league and he's mediocre in life. The reason why he lost his job with that Copen State was because his record was like 9-14. Who's going to let you continue to pay and pay you the big bucks and have that type of score? Nobody. And you couldn't protect your players. Who going to want to pay for you when you can't even protect the players and y'all not winning anything? And the only reason why she continues with this guy is they're locked in because they've almost been together for 3 freaking decades. She supports the mediocrity because then she doesn't have to be great or answer why she's still with this bum. Her dancing around allegations, not being truthful, and just out and out lying. She says, well, I didn't really say that, but they got you recorded. Well, I didn't mean that. What did you mean? Because you said that. It's just so frustrating to watch her and Giselle deflect. And we're tired of it. That's why she didn't renew or she chose not to come back. And until she is able to basically put her life and all the mess on blast, because I don't think she can do that because Juan does not have the ego to be able to withstand you taking a closer look at his life and being able to dissect it and revealing just how much of a bum he is. But I digress. And I also think that nobody wants to see his life, but yes. And if they don't have somebody other than them managing their finances, they're going to lose that house again in a few short years. And if she doesn't have Real Housewives of Potomac money, more so than whatever she could get from that whack podcast. And that's all I got to say about that. I'm kind of over the respectability politics of that they're trying to portray. I'm more about the real, and that's why Messy Mia Be Lying is better, probably the best than all of them, and able to withstand the drama that's about to come for at least the next 2 seasons. If you're not going to show clock in and work, I don't really need to see you, and I'm not going to watch. I'm going to pay for it without watching, without talking about it. I'm definitely not going to blog about it. And that's all I got to say about that. And that's it for this episode of Ten Fro is Reading. You know, I talked cash-ish all last year. I hope the listening audience will continue to enjoy my opinion and not so subtle shade. I mean, I'm 2,000 listeners per episode in, so go run tell that, haters. I may take it on the road if I get hint-hint sponsorship. Navigate to dalesangelsinc.blog for swag and extended podcast notes. Don't forget to hit like or leave a 5-star review. It gets me on top of the algorithms and it may just get you on my show. 2023's motto is boss up and get the bag. And as always, tell a friend and thank you for listening.